Hello and welcome to New World Witchery's Folk Magician's Notebook episode for July 2022. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. As always, we highly recommend that you also pick up a reputable and reliable almanac for folk magic, such as the Witch's Almanac, Llewellyn's Witch's Datebook, or your local Farmer's Almanac. Let's take a look at the moon for July 2022. The July full moon happens on Wednesday, July 13th in the sign of Capricorn, and is known commonly as the Buck Moon or the Thunder Moon. The new moon comes on July 28th in the sign of Leo, which will also be the ruling solar sign at that point. Some notable astrological dates. We start the month transitioning out of a new moon in Cancer and into the bright, bold Leo. It's not a strong sign for growing, but it is the right time for cultivating and preserving your work by clearing out dead or dying plants and weeds and putting up summer preserves. The first quarter on the 6th is the sign of Libra, making it a good time for working with flowers, especially ones you want to bloom beautifully and big. That can mean planting them or just enriching their soil and pruning them as needed. That goal is reinforced by the full moon in Capricorn, which also brings fruitful flowering. The entire period between the first quarter and the full moon, then, is good for job-related work, where you need to shine in the eyes of others, but also be seen as productive. It's a good time to do work for gaining favor with employers, landlords, banks, and others who have money or resources you need help with, but also good for crafting magic around strengthening community resources, ensuring abundance for all the months to come. As the moon wanes to the last quarter, it will be in Aries, heading towards Taurus. This is a good time for working with roots and underground crops like onions, garlic, and potatoes, and also magic involving taking away things like warts or bad influences. July 20th is the feast day of St. Elijah the Thunderer, also associated with the Slavic thunder god Perun, and water gathered from storms in the week after this day is thought to have powerful magical properties, including curse-breaking, countering the evil eye, and banishment of evil. The new moon on the 28th brings us back around to Leo, which will be an ideal time to set in motion new plans both in the garden and your life. After you've cleared away the bad, you can set in motion big picture, long-term goals using magical techniques like spirit contracts, jar spells, or even more contemporary vision boards to maintain far-reaching magics. Another note, if you live in the southern U.S. or Mexico or Central America, at the end of the month you'll also see a meteor shower around the constellation of Aquarius, known as the Delta Aquarid Shower. Combined with the big plans energy of Leo around that time, you could always make a whole slew of wishes on those falling stars. Now let's take a look at cards, divination, and proverbs for the month. Our playing card of the month is the Seven of Spades. Sevens in my system of cardomancy are what I call pinnacle cards, meaning they're sort of a pivot around which all the other cards in that suit spin, and as such their meanings can have some strange twists in relation to the suit more generally. The spades, for example, are often about loss or negativity. The seven of spades represents tears, blood, and war, which seems to fit well initially, but if a seven of spades comes up with, say, a jack or a queen of diamonds, it may be that there's unexpectedly good news about a new baby or a wedding coming along, and the tears would become tears of joy. The Seven of Spades represents outcomes, then. The tears that follow a powerful emotion setting in, the blood that flows after a wound is sustained or a life is restored, the battlefield smoldering and shattered after a war campaign. It can feel sorrowful and mournful, but it also means that if you're seeing it, you've likely made it through the worst of what you must endure, or that whatever you need to experience is reaching its crescendo. It's almost like the smell of petrichor, that scent of soil just after a rainstorm. Something that humans can smell as well or better than sharks can smell blood in the water. Sometimes we need the storm to get where we need to be next, after all. Our tarot card of the month is the Tower. People often fear this card because it's, well, pretty scary looking. Lightning strikes a monumental tower, shattering it as people go diving from it in a frantic attempt to save themselves. For those of us who lived through events like September 11th, that image resonates strongly. and it can feel incredibly bleak and dire. The tower's significance often does involve cataclysmic change, a violent break from the past, from pride, from everything we valued before. It's related to the story of the Tower of Babel in biblical folklore, which was destroyed as a punishment for human beings trying to assail heaven, or in other words, trying to get too close to God or the gods, and being struck down out of fear that they might succeed. This card sometimes gets read as Pride Goes Before a Fall, and its location in the tarot card deck, right after the Devil card, which indicates temptation, can feel like a story about lacking personal discipline and getting some sort of comeuppance. But it's also important to remember that just after the Tower is the Star, a period of rest, recuperation, and reset. The Tower is a hurricane, a blast of stormy events that disrupt the systems that keep us bound, like the humans are often bound on the preceding Devil card. The unshackling can be painful and scary, but once we've escaped the brunt of the storm, we get a chance to start anew. We can harness the chaotic, disruptive power of the Tower scenario to initiate changes we want to see in our world, a break from the past, and a commitment to a new way of doing things. It's important to remember that people respond strongly to fear, so tempering any use of the Tower's meaning with compassion is crucial to getting to that next starry phase. Our folk divination method of the month, using weather to predict weather. Now, there are lots of ways of predicting weather and other events using the current state of the sky or atmosphere. Plenty of people have heard the saying, red sky at night, sailors or shepherds delight. Red sky at morning, sailors or shepherds take warning. It's even cited in Shakespeare and the Bible as an authoritative way of predicting when storms will come, following a reddish hue to the sky in the morning, which can indicate a change in pressure systems coming from the west and thus a storm rising up, and moving towards you west to east. Similarly, a rainbow in the west can mean a storm is heading your way, while a rainbow in the east means the storm has come past. Cloudy conditions at night usually mean a warm day to follow, while two layers of clouds moving in different directions can mean violent storms coming soon. The high atmospheric condition that makes alto cumulus clouds look like fish scales has led them to being called mackerel skies. And there's an old phrase for that one too. Mackerel skies and mare's tails mean tall ships carry short sails. This means that those seeing fish scale skies and wispy horsehair-like clouds among them, that will lead to windy, stormy conditions in the next few days. A bright, crisp moon can mean dry, clear conditions that will be replaced by rain soon, as can seeing a ring around the moon. But your eyes aren't the only way to use weather predicting signs. Your nose can actually be just as powerful. If you start suddenly smelling wet soil or flowers that smell sweeter and stronger than usual, that probably means rain is coming soon too. Our witch's proverb of the month comes to us from Ovid, who says, "The drop wears the stone not by force, but by constant falling." No! Our folk tales this month are three tales of Elijah from Jewish folklore in honor of July, containing the feast for Elijah the Thunderer. The first story is Elijah the Slave. A poor man, the father of a family, in his distress once prayed to God, "O Lord of the world, thou knows there is none to whom I can tell my tale of woe, none who will have pity on me. I have neither a brother nor a kinsman nor a friend, and my starving children are crying with hunger. Have mercy, be compassionate, or please let death come to put an end to our suffering." His words found a hearing with God, and as he finished, Elijah stood before the poor man and sympathetically inquired why he was weeping. When the prophet had heard the tale of his troubles, he said, "Well, take me, sell me as a slave. The proceeds will suffice for thy needs." Well, at first the poor man refused, of course, to accept that sacrifice, but finally, after much pressure, yielded, and Elijah was sold to a prince for 80 denarii. That sum then formed the nucleus of a fortune which the poor man amassed and enjoyed until the end of his days. The prince who had purchased Elijah intended to build a palace, and he rejoiced to hear that his new slave was, by reputation, an architect. He promised Elijah liberty within 6 months if he completed the edifice. Well, after nightfall on that same day, Elijah offered a prayer, and instantaneously the palace stood in its place, complete and in perfection. Elijah then disappeared. The next morning, the prince was not a little astonished to see that the palace was finished, but when he sought his slave to reward him, he sought in vain, and he realized that he'd had dealings with an angel. Elijah, in the meantime, repaired to the man who had sold him and related the story, that he might know he'd not cheated the purchaser out of his price. On the contrary, he had enriched him, since the palace was worth 100 times more than the money paid for a pretended slave. Tale number 2, Elijah and the 2 shekels. In the form of an Arabian man, Elijah appeared before a very poor man whose piety was equaled by his poverty. And so the prophet gave him 2 shekels. These 2 coins he then multiplied, and they brought him such good fortune that he attained great wealth. But in his zeal to gather worldly treasures, he had no time for deeds of piety and charity. Elijah again appeared before him and took away the 2 shekels, and in a short time the man was as poor as before. Then a third time Elijah came to him, and the man was crying bitterly and complaining of his misfortune. So the prophet said, "I shall make you rich once more, if you will promise me under oath that you will not let this wealth ruin your character." He promised, and so the 2 shekels were restored to him, and again he eventually regained his wealth, and this time ensured to be generous to the poor and care for those who needed his aid. And so he remained in possession of his wealth for all time, because his piety was not curtailed by his riches. And the final tale, Elijah, the Widow, and the Oil. Elijah came to the home of a recent widow who told him, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord, but the creditors are coming to take my 2 sons away to be his slaves." So Elijah said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what is it that you have in your house?" And she said, "Your servant has nothing but a jar of oil in the house." And so Elijah said, "Go, borrow vessels from everywhere, from all your neighbors, empty vessels. Don't gather just a few. And when you've come in, you shall shut the door behind you and your sons and begin pouring into all those vessels the oil and set aside all the full ones." And so she went from him and she shut the door behind her and her sons, who brought the vessels to her, and she poured out the oil. And it came to pass that the vessels were full, and she said to her son, "Bring another vessel." And he said to her, "There is not another vessel." And so the oil ceased. And she came and told the man of God, and he said, "Go, sell all the excess oil and pay your debt, and you and your sons can live on the rest." These stories center on Elijah as a sort of wealth bringer, someone who rewards hard work and goodness with financial security. Yet, under that message, there are some other important points. In the first tale, Elijah's acts enrich not only the poor man, but the wealthy patron as well. Yet Elijah must be sold as a slave, and his construction of the palace is miraculous, almost like the work of a jinn in the tales of Aladdin in the 1001 Nights. In the second tale, the 2 shekels are a small beginning that grows, but importantly, they are also a point of vulnerability. They're a magic charm upon which wealth is built or lost. When they're taken away, they drain away all the wealth with them until the man agrees to act more compassionately. In the final story, Elijah asks the widow what she has already, and then multiplies that to save her sons from slavery. It can be very easy to get tied up in concepts like health and wealth morality. A number of people become very invested in the story that the deity of their choice will reward their good life with material gain, for example, and that poverty must somehow be indicative of a poor character. Yet in all of these stories, we see that poverty is a condition of need at the outset, not something caused by any immoral behavior. While the second story does explicitly tie good deeds to keeping the wealth, it's also illustrating the point that material things are fleeting, and that the whims of gods, prophets, wizards, and more can take things away from us just as easily as we can gain from them. Tying wealth to morality is a risky venture. While Elijah does wonderful things in stories like these, the tides of fortune can shift quickly. Why are the people in these stories in poverty at all? Well, because their communities are not seeing their needs, not caring for them. Some people may read these stories as reinforcing stories about leading a good life, leading to a just reward. But I see them as an indictment of a world that allows poverty to exist. Elijah makes abundance from small things. He stops and spends time with those who need him, and he offers his skills to help them. I do not see him as someone who clucks his tongue about the failed morality of a poor father or widow, or even a man who starts with just 2 shekels to rub together. Instead, he makes the point that poverty is not a moral condition unless you are wealthy and do nothing to help alleviate it. Wealth is meant to be shared, even little by little, so that it can multiply goodness in the world. That's one of the reasons I think that many money spells ask you to spend the coins or dollars that you dress with oil or keep in a money bowl. You have to find things to do with that money, and sometimes that's making sure that someone has a meal that might not have had one that day, or helping someone to pay for some bus fare to get where they need to go. Storms and lightning come for everyone in life, after all, and if we're going to be there to pick up the pieces afterward, we need others to help us, and so we need to help others. We use magic against oppression on behalf of those who have less, including ourselves sometimes, of course. We multiply blessings. We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add a practical element to your work. This month we're doing anti-storm charms. One we've talked about a lot on the show is using a knife or an axe blade for an oncoming storm by driving it into the ground with a blade facing into the wind, which supposedly cuts the storm's power. It's also said that keeping oak branches and acorns in your home is thought to help lightning-proof a building, and there's even some evidence that 19th and 20th century folks in England made their pull cords on curtains and blinds into acorn shapes due to this association. Stone axes or axe-shaped rocks and arrowheads found in places where lightning is struck are known as thunderstones and said to be powerful protection from storms and other harm. Some researchers have noted that this tradition was common in the 19th century, and frequently even fossils were called thunderstones and used for this purpose. There are also accounts of vulva and depictions of vulva being used as anti-storm charms. Plutarch, for example, mentions that people with vulva would expose their genitalia to calm raging storms. And Catalonian folklore includes a belief that exposure of the vulva before a fishing trip would bring good luck and fair weather. Finally, one of the most powerful charms is a common houseplant. Growing house leek on a roof or in the highest room of your house has long been associated with warding off lightning and fire in European lore, and removing house leek from someone else's house was even a method of cursing that household in Wales. So for a craft, why not combine some of these methods? For example, you could put a thunderstone or an old axe head or even a knife into the bottom of a flower pot. Decorate the pot with images of acorns and oak leaves, a very common motif in some Pennsylvania German hex signs and barn signs. Or you could even use the vulva motif as well. You could even make a set of clay vulva that you attach to the rim of the pot. Then grow some house leek in the pot and keep it in the highest room of your house, at least as high as you can manage, to ward off storms. If you're feeling really crafty, you could even make little vulva-shaped pots and plant the house leeks in those, then leave them on a windowsill, and maybe tie a few acorns into the curtain poles on that window, of course. Well, that's it for this entry into your New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook. Thank you so much for joining us this month. We hope that you are looking forward to a warm and wonderful July if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, or a cool and brisk autumnal July if you're in the Southern Hemisphere. We hope that you have a good month waiting for you no matter where you are. Hope that this is giving you some food for thought, some things to experiment with and try out, that you've maybe learned something new or at least found something old new again. If you're interested in getting in touch with us, sharing your thoughts on this episode or any others, you can do so through our website, newworldwitchery.com. You can also send us an email at compassandkey@gmail.com or newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com. Both of those will reach us. Find us on all sorts of social media, including Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, even TikTok if you're so inclined. We're around all those places. If you're interested, you can always check out our sister shows, Chasing Foxfire, which is the intersection of folklore and a number of other fields. Or you can check out Myth Taken, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast as well, in which we explore Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the cult show, episode by episode, and then explore some of the folklore and mythology that goes along with that, too. So feel free to check those out, too, if you're interested. That will about do it for us this time. Thank you again so much for listening, and we hope that you have a wonderful month. Be well.